It's about 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated July 15th, 2016. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Scoville Sculpture Park Coming Together. Visions Take Shape Within Park. When we're young, we're taught to fear dragons, but the one sitting in front of the Children's Museum of Illinois isn't so frightening. At least that's what artist Doug Gruzenga was thinking about when he created the large aluminum sculpture. It seems as though the dragons are probably just as scared of us as we are of them, or they wouldn't be acting so weird and scary. Fear drives anger. What's the solution to that? Said Gruzenga, 69, who has a background in social work. Well, if you get to know somebody or something, and you gain knowledge of them, you're generally not afraid anymore. You kind of become friends, he said. Thus, the sculpture is titled, Please Sit Down, Read Me a Story. It is one of 11 pieces of art that will soon fill the area between Scoville Zoo and the Children's Museum of Illinois. The Decatur Parks Foundation is overseeing the project with a $250,000 grant from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation and cooperation with the Children's Museum. Decatur Park District, Decatur Area Arts Council, and Newhoff Media. Installation began Thursday and will continue today. Most of the artists are bringing their pieces and arranging them, along with help from Park District employees across many departments. It has all been all hands on deck to get the park and adjacent Oriental Garden ready, said Jill Appleby, executive director of the foundation. The Scoville Sculpture Park will open for a community walk from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday. Most of the artists will be on hand to discuss their work, along with Coffee Connection and Mr. Softy. The first 500 attendees will receive a free commemorative blanket. Appleby said the park was coming along very well Thursday. She has enjoyed meeting the artists and hearing their stories, and hopes the public will too. The passion and the love for their art is amazing, she said. It's really neat to see. There has been one snag as a piece of depicting a butterfly. As a piece depicting a butterfly on a flower was damaged beyond repair during its journey to Decatur. The sculpture will be on display for 2 years. Sculptures will be on display for 2 years and will be available for purchase from the artists, with 20% of the proceeds going to the Parks Foundation. New pieces will be chosen to replace them in 2018. Additionally, the committee will select one other piece to display permanently. While that announcement was expected to take place this week, Appleby said it has been pushed back after the roughly 25 submissions didn't quite fit the committee's vision. Now I think we have a better feel for what we want, she said. Now that everything else is laid out, it's really making more sense. By far the most labor-intensive piece is Matthias Newman's Bench. 4. Basics. That's Bench for Basics, which is more or less what it sounds like, a large wooden bench made mostly of 2x4s. It will take roughly 2 days to assemble. So can you sit on it or not? Newman, 46, of Brooklyn, New York, said that's exactly what he hopes people will think when they look at his work. I hope it evokes questions, he said. I hope people will not just pass by and think, oh, there's another sculpture in the park. And does he hope they'll sit down? He laughed. I hope that half the people do and half the people don't. If you go, it's a community walk at Scoville Sculpture Park from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, July 16th. Also on the front page, in government and politics, university leaders say stopgap budget only a step. Springfield. Stopgap funding the state approved last month hasn't ended ongoing budget worries at state universities. Southern Illinois University and Eastern Illinois University leaders have noticed the same concerns about long-term funding, have voiced the same concerns about long-term funding. Southern's Leaders spoke to the university's Board of Trustees on Thursday. The deal that the Democratic-controlled General Assembly and Republican Governor Bruce Rauner reached in June provided the SIU system with $106.2 million on top of the $57.5 million it received in an April emergency funding bill for higher education. But that represents just 82% of what the university received from the state for the 2014-15 school year, and it's supposed to cover 18 months' worth of expenses from July 1, 2015 through December 31st of this year. SIU President Randy Dunn reminded trustees of a speech he gave earlier this year, before either of the funding bills was approved, during which he warned of the consequences the campuses in Carbondale, Edwardsville, and Springfield would face without the guarantee of state support. You can just rewind that speech once again, and this time start inserting the date of January 2017, February 2017, Dunn said. Although the stopgap funding is sufficient for us to be able to move forward with relatively normal operations through the first of the calendar year, he said, we're going to be right back to the position we were in last March once we come to that point. Despite the infusion of cash, the Carbondale campus has announced nearly $21 million in permanent budget cuts, including laying off some employees and leaving more than 150 positions unfilled, Chancellor Brad Colwell said. Speaking after the meeting, Dunn said the university system has decided to apply all the state money it has received thus far to expenses from the 2015-16 school year and to continue urging lawmakers to provide adequate funding for the full 2016-2017 school year. We thought, let's get the bills paid that are out there, he said, and that gives us a very strong argument to say, now, fund us for 17. You can't even get us totally caught up for fiscal year 16. Board Chairman Randall Thomas said trustees will continue reaching out to lawmakers and urging alumni to do the same, to pressure them to approve funding. Everyone who has a campus in his or her district needs to hear from us, Thomas said. Eastern Illinois University will have to continue to remain sparing with expenditures into the fall semester, but a need for further layoffs is unlikely in the near future with the assistance of recent state funding. EIU President David Glassman said because of the latest state's appropriation geared toward assisting higher education, he does not anticipate additional major cuts in EIU's personnel. The state appropriated $26.2 million to Eastern, which is meant to assist the university in operational expenses through the end of the calendar year. The university will also receive the remaining amount of MAP funding, $3.5 million, that Eastern advanced to its students in spring 2016. This is only a temporary measure, though, and the university will have to proceed with spending cautiously, Glassman said. Because EIU has not received a full fiscal year 2017 budget, we do not know what level of funding to expect after January 1, 2017, he said. Therefore, we must continue to be very fiscally prudent and cautious in our expenditures throughout the fall. However, Glassman said the university has been able to call back a few individuals who were laid off. Glassman said the outlook after the end of the year appears positive for the university, as long as the state's plan for full funding soon is followed. The state legislature may appropriate more funds or actually have a full budget in place by the end of the calendar year. I am very hopeful that the pattern of sporadic stopgap funding measures, rather than full-year funding, will not continue, he said. The importance of receiving a full fiscal year budget cannot be understated. It is the only way in which universities can make essential planning decisions and implement strategic initiatives necessary for improving the institution and enhancing academic excellence. This latest stopgap funding was the second time the state legislature provided temporary funding while members try to decide on a budget. This appropriation is more than double the funding of what the university received earlier this year, however. However, it is still a departure from the $40 million appropriated in fiscal year 2015. Now, 14 days into another fiscal year, the university has received $38.7 million. I think that's supposed to be million, in appropriated funds, excluding MAP grant funding. With or without further funding, the university will still be able to operate past December 31st, even though it no longer has reserves for protection, Glassman said. The combination of tuition money and state funding will move the university forward. In local news and government and politics, voters get chance to decide on sales tax increase, Decatur. The question of whether to raise the county sales tax to cover the costs of public safety will now be put to the voters. The Macon County Board unanimously approved a plan during its Thursday night meeting that would place a binding referendum on the November ballot that asks whether to impose a quarter of a percentage point increase on Macon County's share of local sales tax, or an additional 25 cents for every $100. The current quarter percent in place on local sales tax brings in $2.5 million per year. The increase, which is expected to bring in an additional $2.5 million per year, would go toward the cost of the justice system, from the circuit clerk and the state's attorney's office to the operations of the sheriff's office and the county jail. Jay Dunn, chairman of the county's finance committee, noted commercials that have popped up recently that highlighted the area's lower crime rates as compared to Sangamon and Champaign counties, and added that additional funds will be necessary to maintain that. "I personally would like to see it stay like that," he said. "Every one of these departments are doing a great job, and they're making cuts while still trying to protect the county." It is not uncommon for counties to have a sales tax to cover public safety, as 36 counties across Illinois have a rate of at least a quarter of a percent to cover these costs. As of 2013, Moultrie and Logan counties have a 0.5% sales tax to cover public safety costs, while Effingham and Champaign counties have the same 0.25% as Macon County. Macon County's current rate has been in place since 2003 and remains tied to the lowest rate in the state with 9 other counties. As the costs of public safety rise, board member Kevin Meacham said that it made sense to bring this ballot item to the voters. "We need to ask our taxpayers what our public safety is worth to them," Meacham said. Funding for the sheriff's office, as well as the state's attorney's office and court operations, have become stretched as salaries have increased at nearly the same rate as the number of inmates in the Macon County Jail, as well as the costs to upgrade equipment and technology. Even with the possible tax increase, the county has asked the sheriff's office to cut 7% in both of its budgets, one that covers daily operations and one that covers jail operations. The two budgets combined are just more than $9 million this fiscal year. With the current proposed cuts, Dunn said it is possible that there could be a few layoffs. If the ballot measure fails this fall, Dunn said next year, upwards of 6 layoffs could occur in the sheriff's office. Turning over tilling methods, farmers get in touch with the land in agriculture. Decatur. Farmers were encouraged Thursday during a soil health field day in Decatur to consider trying different methods to care for their farmland and boost productivity. One of the methods they could utilize is strip tilling, which is controlled tillage used to create an ideal seed-growing environment in specific zones within a field, said Andy Thompson of Yetter Farm Equipment. "We have yet to continue to look for ways to do better," Thompson said. "You can't farm the same way every year and expect the same result. We've got to change our thinking." The event was organized through the Soil Health Partnership, an initiative of the National Corn Growers Association, intended to identify, test, and measure farm management practices that improve soil health and benefit farmers. The Macon County Soil and Water Conservation District, along with the Natural Resources Conservation Service, helped to organize the event. More information can be found on soilhealthpartnership.org. That's all one word, soilhealthpartnership.org, including another field day to be held August 19th in Assumption. Soil health can be defined by the capacity of soil to function as a vital living ecosystem that sustains plants, animals, and humans with living organisms. Doing things such as increasing the capacity for soil to retain water can ultimately improve yields on farms, said Barry Fisher, the Indiana State Soil Health Specialist. You can't order soil health on Amazon.com Prime and have it arrive at your door, Fisher said. You've got to be working on these things. Learning what to do from successful farmers can help, Fisher said. Members of a farmer panel had varying levels of utilizing strip-tilling methods. We're never satisfied, farmer Tom Martin of Mount Pulaski said. There's always something we can do better. Mike Kelly, who farms in McLean County, said strip-tilling has fit well in his operation. He's seen the benefits such as better soil structure. Following the presentations at Dipper Seeds, the group moved to Head Farms to see demonstrations of equipment that can be used for strip tillage and planting cover crops. Farmers followed behind equipment in the fields to see the impact on the dirt that was left behind. They watched as oats were planted to show how cover crops can be applied into the field. All application methods need to be on the table, said Jim Isherman, Soil Health Partnership Field Manager for Illinois. Every field is different. Isherman said healthy soil can be resistant to drought and resilient to floods, along with being part of an efficient strategy to improve water and air quality. Education. Richland Math Course, Bridging the Gap. Decatur. Like a lot of people, Kyle Barr decided to go back to school after he was laid off from Caterpillar Incorporated. But in the years since he last went to school, he'd forgotten some things. It was like it was there, but suppressed, he said. He signed up for the Bridging the Gap math course, a 5-week internet-based and intensive refresher course for students whose assessment test shows deficiencies in math. It's a cooperative venture between the Education Coalition of Macon County, Workforce Investment Solutions, Incorporated, and Richland Community College. Carr wants to be an engineer and would likely have had to take a semester or two of remedial math courses to prepare for college-level math without the course. He plans to attend Richland in the fall to start getting his prerequisite courses done before pursuing a degree in engineering. Students celebrated Wednesday in the Schilling Center at Richland for the successful completion of the course. This is the second year for the course, which is held in the college's math center with tutors. Students take a thorough assessment, and the curriculum is tailored specifically to each student, said Leanne Brooks, Director of Academic Success for Richland. If a student runs into difficulty, they can raise the yellow flag at their computer station, and a tutor will provide assistance. Last year's course was so successful that every student signed up for fall and spring classes at Richland, Brooks said. We've tied this into every aspect of our college, she said. We gave them tours of every dean office, found out what they wanted to study, introduced them to faculty. They're comfortable with being college students. EDCO and Workforce help out by arranging for internships for students so that they can get their work experience and make contacts, said Danny Kraft, Executive Director of EDCO. They update their resumes and work on the soft skills that employees look for. What we've done is we took last year's model and built on it, Kraft said. They went on interviews. We turned it from just a math readiness program to a math readiness and workforce readiness program. State funding was not available for Richland this year, said Robin McCoy, Executive Director of Workforce. Students who were eligible for workforce programs were funded by that organization, and EDCO picked up the remainder, while Richland handled the academic portion. Richland also created a math course for anyone in the community who needs to brush up on their skills, Brooks said. For $30, the non-credit 10-week courses in the college's math lab will provide the same kind of assistance these students received. Call 217-875-7211, extension 362. That's 875-7211, extension 362. McDaniel seeks another Decatur City Council term. Decatur City Councilman Pat McDaniel will run for another term in the April election, he said Thursday. McDaniel, 67, is the retired executive director of the Macon County History Museum. He was first elected to the council in 2011 and ran unsuccessfully for mayor last year. In a news release sent to reporters, McDaniel said he has been honored to serve residents and work with others to make the city more desirable and sustainable. I will continue to be a voice for and represent all segments of the community, as I have been doing as a city council member, to ensure that every citizen is heard as we move the community forward in creating a better quality of life for all, he said. He also pledged to work toward creating more job opportunities by establishing sound and creative city economic development policies to encourage growth. McDaniel has long been well known for attending a variety of government and community meetings, a practice he promised to continue. As an elected leader in the community, I've always found that really listening to citizens is a key factor in beginning beneficial dialogues that will help citizens believe that they really count in the local governmental process in the effort to help move our community forward, he said. McDaniel said he planned to continue pursuing several priorities, including a budget that does not overburden residents with taxes and fees and infrastructure improvements and maintenance. He said he would seek to look at the big picture in moving Decatur forward, but also keep an eye on smaller snapshots of the community for areas that need improvements. While he said he did not want to micromanage city staff, McDaniel said his job as a councilman is to look for ways to better the community and to challenge city staff when they are not meeting residents' standards. McDaniel worked as a reporter and photographer for the Decatur Tribune from 2003 to 2011 and has decades of sales experience, including 18 years with the greeting card division of Sangamon Incorporated. He served in the Army from 1968 to 1971. One other candidate, Decatur Park District Commissioner Chris Riley, has already declared his intention to seek a council seat. On the Life page, under Faith and Values, Speaking Their Language, Traveling Troop Brings Christ to Kids and Their Families, Decatur. Kids Turn, a 6-member team that travels full-time ministering to children and families, made quite an impression on Luke Witz when the Decatur native was studying in New Jersey to become a pastor. That's when he encountered the Hedgeville, West Virginia troop and never forgot their interactive multimedia approach to presenting the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's high-quality, highly engaging opportunity for entire families to get involved, as opposed to dropping off your kids and letting the church minister to them, said Witz, a 2011 graduate of Argenta Oriana High School. Children's pastor at Heartland Community Church for the past 2 years, Witz is bringing Kids Turn to Decatur over the next few days to let the community in on the experience. It's a couple of notches above your typical vacation Bible school, and this summer it will take the place of one for us, he said. Kids Turn got started 25 years ago when the Reverend Carl Lucier, now 62, left his pastorate at an Assembly of God church in Barton, Vermont, bought an RV and began touring the United States as a children's evangelist with his wife Kathy and their 4 children, Sam, Matt, Rachel, and Debbie. Originally known as the Lucier Family Ministries, the family adopted the name Kids Turn in 1999, and over the years have expanded their repertoire of teaching methods to encompass puppetry, storytelling, high-energy music, video projection, and lighting effects, and more. One special feature is the phone booth. A child gets to go in and into or send someone else in after winning a game. Kids love getting covered in bubbles, said Rachel Lucier, 35. It's a lightweight foam that dissipates quickly. Carl Lucier said that the mission is to present the gospel in a clear and relevant manner to help families give their children a foundation for life. Christ is the hope for all all their problems," said Debbie Lucier, 33. "We need to introduce kids to him while they're young. Their set will pretty much replace our typical Sunday setup," Witz said. "They bring everything in 40-foot trailers and do everything they can to make sure you're not just sitting there and watching them. They have a great heart for ministry. Now, if you go, it's a Kids Turn Traveling Children's Ministry. It's at 6 p.m. Sunday, July 17th, and 7 p.m. Monday through Wednesday, July 18th through the 20th. It's at the Heartland Community Church at 3253 Brush College Road. Or you can check www.kidsturn, that's KIDZTURN.com, or find the troupe on Facebook. Old West Nun's story comes to TV, Albuquerque, New Mexico. An Italian-born nun who once challenged Billy the Kid, calmed angry mobs, opened hospitals and schools in the American Southwest, and is now a path toward possible sainthood, soon will be the subject of a TV series. Sainthood Productions, based in Albuquerque, New Mexico, is scheduled Wednesday to announce a new project around Sister Blandina Stegall, a 19th-century nun whose clashes with Old West outlaws and work with immigrants has been the stuff of legend. At the end of the Santa Fe Trail aims to be a fictional account based on Stegall's life and largely will use material from her 1932 book with the same name. That book consisted of Stegall's letters that she wrote to her sister about the lawlessness in Trinidad, Colorado, and in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, New Mexico. She also discussed working with immigrants and prisoners. Her encounters with Old West outlaws later became the subject of an episode of the CBS series Death Valley Days titled The Fastest Nun in the West. According to one story, she received a tip that Billy the Kid was coming to her town to scalp four doctors who refused to treat his friend's gunshot wound. Stegall nursed the friend to health, and when Billy went to Trinidad to thank her, she convinced him to abandon his violent plan. Alan Sanchez, president and CEO of CHI St. Joseph's Children, an Albuquerque community health organization born of Stegall's work, said the nun is a perfect subject for a television series, since many of the same issues she faced still resonate. She saw a divided country. She fought violence with nonviolence. She worked to stop discrimination against immigrants, Sanchez said. These are all things we are seeing today. The new production comes as Albuquerque has become a popular filming location for television series, ranging for AMC TV's Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and NBC's The Night Shift. It also comes just as the Roman Catholic Church is examining Stegall for sainthood. In October, the Archdiocese of Santa Fe formally closed its inquiry on why the legendary nun should become a saint and sent its findings to the Vatican. The public inquiry, headed for former Archbishop Michael Sheehan, headed by former Archbishop Michael Sheehan, was aimed at determining if there was enough evidence to move her case through the largely secret process at the Vatican. Witnesses said Stegall fought against the cruel treatment of American Indians and sought to stop the trafficking of women as sex slaves. They also testified that in death, Stegall had helped cancer patients and poor immigrants who had prayed for help. It's the first time in New Mexico's 400-year history with the Roman Catholic Church that an inquiry was completed in the state on the cause of beatification and canonization. Officials say determining whether Stegall qualifies for sainthood could take up to a century. The Vatican has to investigate her work and monitor for any related miracles. Stegall, a nun with the Sisters of Charity of Cincinnati and an advocate for Hispanics and Native Americans, founded schools in New Mexico and founded St. Joseph Hospital, a predecessor of the Albuquerque Health Organization. She worked as an educator and social worker in Ohio, Colorado, and New Mexico. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald in Review.